Thank you, Ryan. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday show. It's us. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Jump in. 312-981-7200.
It's Funky Wednesday.
Yes, it is.
Get your funk on.
Yes, it is. I can't deny it. You know how sometimes on the show, you or me or both of us will mention somebody obscure who hasn't been heard from in a while.
And then they die
just minutes later.
Who did you kill?
I didn't, but I just wanted to point out to you that you and I are not the only people at this station that have that ability. Here's why. On Monday night, I was listening to Justin Kaufman at night, and he had like a political roundtable, as Justin often does. Some people on the left, some people on the right, and he's in the middle kind of, you know, driving the bus. So they mention, even though they're talking about politics, one of the people on the roundtable mentions that Chuck Berry had died. And they all talk about how much Chuck Berry had meant to them. And then one of them accidentally says Chuck Barris. And it's not Chuck Barris who had died. It was Chuck Berry who had died. And then they called him out on it. They go, I think you mean Chuck Berry. And he goes, what did I say? Chuck Barris. And he goes, well, he's dead too. But that was on Monday night. And Chuck Barris had not died. Yesterday, Chuck Barris died.
No!
Yes.
He won't be back with more
stuff.
I don't like this. They've just put an order in for a new gong show.
Right.
He could have, you know, handed off the baton or the microphone
right.
or the hand clapping or whatever it was that he would. How old was he?
He was 87 years old.
Good God, y'all.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Although even when he did the gong show, so at the time, if he was 87, he had to be in his late 40s, right?
Yeah, but he looked like he was in his 40s.
Yeah, he did.
I know it was a long time ago. I'm remembering the gong show like it was just on last night.
No, think about, I mean, late 1970s was the gong show. And his career, I mean, long before he was the host of the gong show, which made him kind of a household name, he was a big-time wheeler, dealer, producer of other game shows. He created the Newlywed Game. He created the Dating Game, a couple of others that aren't as well-known. But Chuck Barris was like a driving force. It was Chuck Barris and Goodman and Todman. Those were the guys that created your game shows. And Hader and Quigley were the other ones. They did Let's Make a Deal and a couple of others.
You scare me sometimes.
Me too. Me too.
Wow.
He also, you know the song Palisades Park? Last night I took a walk in the dark to a place called Palisades Park. You know that song? Big hit in the early 60s.
Yeah.
He wrote that.
He was a songwriter
as
well?
Yeah.
That's can I hear work. A little Palisades Park? Who
See
did
if
it?
You can find that, Kevin. I just did. I'm sure there's other versions on YouTube, but I think it's my version that you just heard that'll go down as
I did
the
hear that.
Ultimate
but
version
no.
of Palisades
you
Park.
You are a singer now.
Yeah.
Quincy Jones on the phone with
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I just spoke with Quincy Jones. But how weird is that for somebody to accidentally say on Monday, Chuck Barris died? Because their names, I give it to you, you couldn't be more similar in names than Chuck Berry. And Chuck Barris, but then a day later, less than a day later, no more Chuck Barris.
I'm saddened by this death.
He was as entertaining as could be. Now, keep in mind, for people who never got to see the Gong Show,
Google it.
It's worth Googling because it's almost like a like you know how some things are right in the middle of a dream and a nightmare.
Yes, I do.
That's how that show was.
He had a lot of extra saliva in his mouth as he talked.
Yes.
He always seemed to have a lot of saliva.
Right.
He was goofy.
Yes.
It was hokey yet great. I don't know how else to describe it.
An incredible amount of nervous energy because, as he used to say oftentimes, it made him nervous. He wasn't a game show host, but then he was a game show host. So he'd be out there just, you know, with all of his little tics. He kept clapping. And then it became a thing. Like after a couple of weeks of the show where he would just be talking and clapping, then the audience started clapping along whenever he would clap. They would clap. It was very funny.
J.P. Morgan was... It was like they were all drunk.
It did seem like they were
drunk. I don't
drunk.
Think they were. And you could tell Chuck Barris wasn't comfortable being a host because it looked almost like a cable access
right.
game show.
Right.
Like on the Wayne's World channel.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah.
Can we hear a little of Palisades Park?
You can even set up an online store.
Is this the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
It's Freddie Boom Boom Cannon?
That's it, Freddie Cannon. But Chuck Barris wrote it. This was a huge hit in right around 1960, right?
What's the year on this, Kevin?
Well, the YouTube video is from 2010.
So in 2010.
You're probably of what, 50s, 60s?
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s. It was, you know, the Gong Show, as crazy of a show as it was, and yeah, it was almost always J.P. Morgan was a mainstay on it. You had a lot of Jamie Farr on there. Artie Johnson showed up way more than he needed to.
1962 was that song,
1962.
By the way.
But then it also provided a place for guys. Oh, Steve Garvey, for some reason, was also a contestant on the Gong Show. Not a contestant,
a judge,
a panelist. A very young David Letterman was a frequent judge on the show. Steve Martin, every once in a while, was a judge on the show.
Wow.
So they did attract some fairly decent sized names to be the judges.
But they weren't that big named people then.
Not at the time. No.
But Palisades Park was a lovely thing, but it doesn't beat this, Bill.
And Gene Gene is dancing machine.
And this was a guy, Gene Gene the Dancing Machine, who was a heavyset black man who could rip it up on the dance floor.
I don't remember the origins of... Now, is it Mean Gene the Dancing Machine or Gene Gene?
Gene Gene.
Is Gene Gene the Dancing Machine?
He has like a bad sweat jacket on, like you'd see what Polly Walnuts wearing.
Yeah.
It was like a track jacket,
right.
A hat, and just dancing up a storm, and they ate him up.
If I remember correctly, the way it would go is he would come out and he would do a dance, and then they'd cut to Chuck and he'd be emulating the dance.
Yeah.
And then there was a woman, a blonde model named C.V. Aberg.
Oh, God, you frighten me.
And then they would cut to her, and she would also be doing the dance. And sometimes Chuck's daughter, Della, was also on the show. They'd cut to her, and that's another sad story. She died of a drug overdose about 20 years ago. Real adorable little girl. But, yeah, quite a life that Chuck Barris led. He did a little bit of everything.
He could really shake his moneymaker off on the sidelines when Gene Gene the Dancing Machine was going.
One of the guys I went to college with, Ray, his dad was in the band. His last name is Neapolitan. I don't remember his dad's first name. But you know how, like, if you watched any TV show in the 60s, at the end it would say music by Duvall?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
All right. So that guy, Frank Duvall, was the band leader on Chuck Barris's show for, I think, the whole run of the show. But he was, I'm trying to remember what the other show you'd know him from. When Fernwood Tonight had Happy Kine in the orchestra,
yes.
He played the role of Happy Kine.
Oh, I know
show.
Exactly who he is. We are intrigued by this phone call from listener Rich. He has called us at 312-981-7200. Hey, Rich. Rich?
I don't think Rich is going to talk to us.
Rich just hung up.
Oh, all right.
I don't know that I believe what
no,
he was...
No, what he's saying is true.
What?
Yeah. Our own Dave Ennett,
who just left
sports
here?
Director, it turns out to be a kind of a distant cousin of Chuck Barris's.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I always loved Dave Ennett, but now I love him more.
It's easy to love him even more knowing this, isn't
it? Did you offer your condolences?
I did, and Dave said that their relationship was somewhat strained.
I don't know if it was strained or just they haven't spoken years.
They had, according to Dave, and I guess I hope he told the story. I don't want to.
Well, maybe you should find out.
All right. I think he told it on Steve Cochran's show, but evidently they only met a couple times in Dave's life, and none of the meetings went real well. That happens.
Well, if you only met somebody twice, you're cousins with Lola Falana.
Yes, I am.
She wasn't very nice to you.
She threw a banana at me. All right, let's take a quick break, and then I'll show you the scar. You want to see the scar?
I don't want to see it.
Look at the scar.
Put your pants back on.
More of us in a minute. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.
All right, Chuck Barris is no longer with us. He lived to the ripe old age of 87. Can you do some Chuck Barris?
Wendy Snyder, why'd you gong my old friend Ryan Burrow and the news people?
More saliva in your mouth.
How's that?
Leonard wants to talk about Chuck Barris and the Gong Show. Hi, Leonard.
Hi there, Wendy.
What's going on?
Hey, just let's ask Bill if he knows about this one.
All right.
Since he, there's a very popular celebrity that actually premiered and became very famous on your station, WGN, from The Gong Show.
I think I can answer that.
You're never going to stump him, by the way, Leonard, but feel free anytime we're on the air to call and try and stump Bill.
I believe the first TV appearance of Chicago's own Bozo, Joey Diario, was on The Gong Show. Would that be correct?
You're right.
Yeah.
Look at how disappointed
Don't be
Leonard
disappointed.
Is.
It's a good question. That's a great question.
All right, so Joey Diorio.
What was his name on The Gong Show?
That I don't know.
You have stumped Bill.
I don't know that one.
It was Mr. Flamo.
Was he Mr. Flamo? Yeah.
So did he went on as a comedian or a magician?
It was like a character he played on the show. Yeah, Mr. Flamo.
Yeah, he put his hands on top of candles and stuff and was singing all kinds of stuff, and then he became very popular. And
he did a song, like, based on the candles, how much pain. Like, he would hold his hands over different flames and go,
I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay, I totally remember that. I'm looking forward to the new Gong Show now.
Yeah, me too.
Because there are just stupid people that will share crazy instincts.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Leonard.
Thanks, Leonard.
You're welcome.
Another interesting phone call, Bill, I think you'll appreciate. Rich is on the line. Hi, Rich.
Yes, hello. Listen, it just so happens 1995, my daughter was born. She's 22. She's going to be graduating from the University of Illinois.
Congrats.
It just so happens when my wife was delivering her, I had the Gong Show on.
Really?
And Jean, the dancing machine came on.
Yeah.
And she looks up and she says, "Would you turn that off, please?" I'm like, "No, it's so funny. You're delivering a baby, and Gene dance machine is dancing for us."
I think the best thing you can say about a show is that it induced labor. I think that's a really good compliment for any TV show.
I would say so.
And did you name your daughter Gina?
No, her name is Mariah, like the wind.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, gorgeous.
That's very pretty.
Well, congratulations on all her success.
I love you guys every day, and I love you guys.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate it.
All right.
Do you remember they had a song that Chuck Barris would sing every once in a while, and the song would go, "I'm going to play my trumpet," and then everybody would go, "What are you going to do?" And he'd go, "I'm going to play my trumpet. What are you going to do?" And that would just go on forever. "I'm going to play my trumpet now." And then he would just play the trumpet for 3 seconds. "I'm going to play my trombone. What are you going to do?" "I'm going to play my trombone." That was like, I don't know what it was, but we were mesmerized by that. Like, this guy just plays whatever instrument he wants, and he tells everyone he's going to do it. He's a genius.
You gotta, listeners, if you have not seen The Gong Show, or if you're like me and haven't seen it in a while, There are a ton of clips on YouTube, and I'm looking at it out of the corner of my eye, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, it really was. Very manic, wasn't it?
I miss it.
There was a crazy energy to it. And then, remember, he tried to spawn off, like, for a while, because The Gong Show was a pretty big hit in syndication. So then he did a show called the $1.98 Beauty Contest.
Yes.
Remember that?
I do.
With Rip Taylor.
Yes.
Which was in the vein of The Gong Show, but not quite as fleshed out.
It was like not uncomfortably bad. The Gong Show was just like your eyes popped out like a cartoon. Like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
The $1.98 Beauty Show was just kind of
watered down a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, not as manic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Go watch The Gong Show, though, and then they'd have like a magic word that was all lit up behind whoever was performing on the stage, and out of the corner of my eye, the word was stuff, because
right.
That's all he said.
He said it a lot, yeah.
That's what I'm going to do tonight in honor of Chuck Barris.
Oh, that's a beautiful tribute. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then a lot more show. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Ryan, and definitely keep us posted on any breaking news. You don't have to turn the dial. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we're joined in the studio right now by a strong woman, a lovely woman. Her name is Deanna Adler, and Deanna is the mother of Steven Adler, original drummer and co-founder of Guns N' Roses. And you have a book that was released earlier this year, Sweet Child of Mine, and How I Lost My Son to Guns N' Roses. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure being here.
You were here a little earlier on the Steve Cochran Show this morning as well. Boy, you're busy.
It was a lot of fun, too.
All right. I have to tell you, as the mother of a 17-year-old son who wants to be a musician, it's something I think about. He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't do drugs at this point. But being in a band, things can change, can't they?
Absolutely, because Steven didn't drink. Wait a minute. He told me he started drinking at age 12. But I didn't know about it.
You really didn't?
No, because they hide. They hide.
Yeah.
I said to him one time, I says, I don't understand. Why didn't I know you were drinking? He says, because I didn't want you to know.
Well, that's what kids do.
You know, that,
right.
You know, you can't keep an eye on them 24 hours a day.
Impossible.
But the hard drugs didn't come till after he was in the band, after they became famous.
Well, that kind of goes with the territory, doesn't it? I hate to say it.
No, when they say sex, drugs, and rock and roll, they mean sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's how it is.
When he was a kid, let's go back to his earliest band days. It certainly didn't start with Guns N' Roses. He was probably doing garage band work. Did you think for a minute he had a chance of making it, you know, as a big-time musician with a band like Guns N' Roses?
You know, it's so rare to be in a band that's, you know, makes it big.
Sure.
And so really rare. Big.
I mean, there are so many kids out there that are so fabulous, but they never make it. And I told Steven, I says, how come you were so lucky that you were able to be in this band and that you were able to make it big like this? He says, you have to be in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of talent, but it's a lot of luck.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I know a musician that's so fabulous. He plays the piano. He plays the drums. He sings fabulously. He's never made it.
And he may never.
There's no guarantee.
He'll never make it because he's already in his 50s.
Yeah.
And he's never going to make it. But Steven made it because he's good, he's kind, and he was in the right place at the right time.
Does he get his talent from you or from his father? Where does the musical ability come from?
Oh, please, I can't even hold a tune. No. God gave him the talent, not me or his father, and nobody.
Yeah.
No.
How old was he when he started playing the drums?
You want to know something? He started playing when he was about 2 years old on Tupperware. On Tupperware. He would sit down on the kitchen floor while I'm cooking, and he had the Tupperware and a couple of wooden spoons.
Yeah.
And he started banging away. And we never thought anything about it. I mean, who thinks something like that?
But the good thing about the drums is it's a quiet, subtle musical instrument.
Oh, yes,
it doesn't bother anybody.
That's what I mean.
Wonderful.
He's playing on the Tupperware. How many times did you say, Steven, cut it out?
No, not at that age.
Really?
No. It's just when you get a full set of drums, that's when you start. When the neighbors start complaining, that's when you say, you can't play the drums in the early morning and late at night. Just play them when the people are at work. But
yeah, from 9 to 5, that's it.
No, nobody listens to me. Even today, my children don't listen to me.
So that never changes?
No.
Oh, great.
Would you go to see him with any frequency when Guns N' Roses was playing? Were you like, I hate to bother you, but I need 4 more tickets. I need 2 more tickets. Were you doing that a lot?
Oh, no, no.
No?
If we wanted to go see him play, we would just call up the management company and they would give us tickets. But we didn't really go see him play that much because they were touring all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a waitress for 31 years.
Mm-hmm.
My husband worked for the railroad. We were just normal people.
Yeah.
And the only reason we would go see him perform is because we had at that time, my youngest son was about 9, 10 years old. Oh, Mommy, take me to see Steven. Take me to see Steven, you know. And we would go and we'd try to take him, you know, what was in the local area,
right.
Let's put it that way. But no, not that much, no.
Okay, so the band Guns N' Roses, hugely successful. When does Steven have his first bout with addiction?
When they made it big. And I asked him about that. I says, what made you, you know, want to take heroin? You know it's no good for you. And his answer to me, and this is the truth, he said, I wanted to be just like the other guys.
Mm.
Those were my family, and I wanted to be just like them. You know, that's what they say. Your peers. That's who you're hanging out with. That's what it is. So that's how he started.
So recovery. How many times? It doesn't
20,
always
25 times.
Oh,
I don't
God.
Know.
But the first time, a lot of parents who are listening, who have a kid who has an addiction, they go to rehab. It doesn't work. They're like, all bets are off. That's it. It's repeated help, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you don't try once, if you try once and it doesn't work, you try again. But you want to know something? The reason Steven would go into all these rehabs is because everybody was telling him, go get cleaned up, go, you know, go into a rehab. But you know what? When somebody else tells you to go into rehab, it doesn't work. Right. I remember one time I said, Stephen, I says, you've got to get help. You've got to go to a rehab. And he says, okay, Ma, I'll go tomorrow. I said, all right. So he goes into the rehab, pays $25,000. And remember, when you pay $25,000, $30,000, or even more, you don't get that money back.
Right.
You can stay 30 seconds and you still don't get that money back. So he went into this rehab and he walks out a few hours later. I said, I don't understand. He says, I just did it to appease you. Mm. That was the word he used, to appease me. And I said, oh, my God. So I never said anything anymore because he's going to be the one to say, I'm going to get well.
Right.
I'm going to get off the drugs. And you know what? How many years was it? What, 30 years, 25 years, something like that? I mean, a long time.
Did you have to bite your tongue, though? Didn't you want to say, as your son, to say, listen, I know, don't do it for me, do it for you. But you really stopped harping at him, didn't you?
Don't do it for me, do it for him. Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, you know, as a mom, and you say, I'm not going to push him anymore. I'm going to wait till he's ready to do it. It had to be tearing you apart inside.
You know what? I had a nine-year-old, or a younger, I should say a younger boy at home, and I had to concentrate on him, okay? I knew in my heart there was nothing I could do for Stephen. The only thing I could do, and the only thing other mothers can do, is be there for them. There's nothing you can do. Just be there.
Were there times, Deanna, that you said to yourself, we're going to lose Stephen. If he keeps going at this rate, we're not going to have him around much longer. That must have happened.
Do you know, for 30 years, I never had a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
And this is true. Every time the phone would ring at night, is it the hospital? Is it the police? Is it the coroner's that's calling me at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning? And that's what mothers think of when they're laying down in bed. I always slept with one eye open. I don't know how that was, but it was always in my mind, you know, listening. And thank God it never happened. I got phone calls saying they was in the hospital.
Yeah.
And the one time I got a phone, I was living in Vegas, and I got a phone call saying that he was in a coma.
Ugh.
And that was very, very bad because I was living in Vegas, and he's over at, I think it was Century City Hospital, and the guy's in a coma, and I get a call from the nurse, from one of the nurses, and she says, your son has to have dialysis, which in 24 hours, or else he's going to die. I says, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody would tell me when he was in the hospital or when he was would have an overdose. They don't tell me these things because they don't want to hurt me.
Yeah.
So my other kids, they never said anything. His friends, they didn't say anything to me. So I says, what are you talking about? He's going to die. And so the nurse told me, she says, well, he came in yesterday with a drug overdose, and he has to have dialysis because all his kidneys are failing.
Shutting down.
Yeah, shutting down. And so I said, well, send me over a piece of paper, and I'll sign it and give him permission to do dialysis, so, which they did right away, and I signed it, and I sent it back. I faxed it back right away, and they gave him dialysis. Now, meanwhile, I have a husband that's an invalid. He's very sick.
Yeah.
And so I said to myself, I got to go to Los Angeles. I got to check up on Stephen. And so I got a nurse to come over to my house to stay.
A caregiver
to stay with my husband while I went to Los Angeles. And I go to Los Angeles. I take a cab over to Century City Hospital, and I walk into his room. And I said, he has tubes all over him. I've never seen anybody in a coma. But I remember that somebody once said that they can hear you talking.
Yeah. Even though they can't communicate.
Yeah, they can't communicate, but they can hear you talking. So I sat down by the bed, and I said, Stephen, everything's going to be all right. Just wake up. It's going to be all right. And he opened one eye. And one single tear came down his one eye. And, of course, I burst out crying. I don't want to cry now. I burst out crying. And he closed his eye again. And then he woke up maybe about 24 hours later. He came out of the coma. And he stayed in the hospital a few more days, you know, and then they sent him home. They sent him home. I don't know who took him home. And this is the truth. he got out of the hospital. And like I said, I don't know who took him home, but he went right to the drug dealer.
No.
I don't know if the drug dealer picked him up or who picked him up, but he went right to the drug dealer. And a few days later, I called him up to say, how are you feeling? Is everything okay? He says, everything's fine. I said, Stephen, what's rock bottom to you? Because I couldn't understand. He was almost dead. I says, what's rock bottom? He says, well, everybody's different. I haven't reached my rock bottom yet. And I said, oh, my God, what's going to happen? You know,
it's heartbreaking, and that's why
it is
a disease. It's an addiction, because no one in their right mind would go back to using drugs after just almost dying.
You know what you just said? In your right mind.
And they're not in their right mind.
Drug addicts are not
in
their right
mind. It takes over them.
That's right. And I learned it wasn't a long time ago, but I finally learned that there's nothing that I could do for him. But I've got to take care of myself, because I have a husband and I have a little boy that has to grow up to be a mensch, okay?
Yeah.
And thank God, he's 41 years old now, my son, and his name is Jamie, and he's a booking agent for hip-hop artists.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and he has his
no
own
drugs?
Business. No drugs. He told me he took drugs for a while, but I don't know what it was. But he
even
grew
after
up.
Seeing Stephen go through what he went through.
Of course. Of course. Hmm. Look at all these drug addicts out there, and they have friends, and they still take drugs, the friends. You know, it's who you're surrounded with.
Well,
that's his brother. Well, my brother's a big rock star, and gee, it's okay, you know, if I take something.
Yeah.
Well, it's not okay. But I'm so happy that this book was published, because I want the parents to know that there's help out there for the parents. My daughter-in-law, who's married to Stephen for 16 years, I think, already, and she's a doll, and she's put up with so much.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, but she just stayed with him because she loves him. But she was the one that told me...
Yeah.
She was the one that told me to start going to Al-Anon meetings. And I said, no, I don't want to go to Al-Anon meetings, because I don't want to know what anybody else goes through. You know, I've had it.
Right.
I just know what I go through. Well, finally, she convinced me to go to an Al-Anon meeting. And you want to know something? I felt so much better when I came out of that meeting, and I said to myself, wow, I don't have it as bad as some of these other people have it. Even though I have it bad, I really don't. And then I told Stephen this. I said, Stephen, I don't have it as bad. And he said to me, he says, Ma, some people have it worse than you, and some people have it better than you. We're in the middle. That's what he says.
The book is
called Sweet Child of Mine, How I Lost My Son to Guns N' Roses. Deanna Adler is with us. We'll continue this next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, you know the band Guns N' Roses. Stephen Adler, original drummer, co-founder of Guns N' Roses. He is the subject of this book, Sweet Child of Mine, How I Lost My Son to Guns N' Roses. His mother, Deanna Adler, in the studio with us. We were talking about something off the air, and there are a lot of people listening whose kids are having trouble with drugs right now. And a lot of times you think you're alone and you don't want to admit it. You made a very interesting point. If someone admits, yes, my son or daughter has a drug problem, your friends know about it. But when you're the mother of a phenom, the whole world knows about it. So that kind of kept you from admitting it at first.
Absolutely. I was so ashamed that my son was on drugs that I wouldn't even tell people who I was. And sometimes my friends would say, do you know who she is?
Right.
You know? And I say, stop that. Don't tell anybody who I am. Because I was so ashamed, because I felt so alone. And I want mothers out there, especially mothers out there, to know it's not your fault. You didn't teach your children to take drugs. You didn't teach your children to drink. They did it on themselves, not you. And I want to tell mothers to go to Al-Anon meetings. I want them to go to AA meetings to see all the different stories that you'll hear. And you'll say, oh, my God, I don't have it so bad. And to take care of yourself. And talk about it. Talk about it.
Don't brush it under the rug.
Yeah. Don't be ashamed that your son or daughter is on drugs. It's okay.
What is Stephen's reaction to you writing this book?
Yeah, has he read it?
First of all, he's very happy that I wrote the book. He won't read it, and I don't blame him, because he doesn't want to read about the pain that he inflicted on me and his family. He doesn't want to do that. So he told me, he said, no, Mom, I'm not going to read the book, but go ahead, go out there and tell people, you know, show the people that it's okay to talk about AA, about Al-Anon,
about addiction.
It's okay. Listen, I'm not a professional person. I'm Stephen Adler's mother, and I'm very proud.
You should be.
You should be. I know it's up to him as to whether or not he's going to read this book, but don't you think he put you through a lot of pain? Don't you think he almost needs to read it?
No.
You don't think so?
No. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he tells me stories and things that I never knew about, you know. And if you would read his book, Appetite for My Destruction, I mean, you would see what he went through, what his life was. And so compare his book with my book. That's all. Read both books, and it's you'll see.
Already become an Amazon best-selling book, Sweet Child of Mine, Deanna Adler. What I've learned from you today, sometimes you can't always control your kids. You said even now they don't listen to you, but you love them and you support them.
That's right. And you said sometimes you can't control your kids. You can never control your kids. Who are you kidding?
That's true.
They have never listened to one word I've said. And the story in the house is, now, whatever Ma tells you, you do the opposite. And I have three sons.
Oh my God.
They've never listened to a thing I've said. Never.
Stephen doing okay now?
He's doing fine.
That's awesome.
He's great. I've been staying with him in L.A. for the last 3 weeks. And you know, for anybody knows me, they know that I'm not staying in a house that has drugs.
Yeah.
So forget that. So, no, he's fine.
That's excellent.
Thank you so much for coming up. And I, you know, Deanna said she just wants to talk to a bunch of mothers and just say you're not alone. And we'll take that to heart.
Yes, please.
Thank you for everything.
Thanks, Deanna.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, and I thank you so much.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show coming. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. Totally appreciate it. I got to tell you, Bill, it's kind of like a special episode of the Bill and Wendy Show
today.
Very
special episode today, yeah.
We had Deanna Adler on, who's talking about her son, Stephen Adler, his battles with drugs and alcohol, and her book, Sweet Child of Mine. And then coming up in our streaming hour, we have Tim Ryan, a man in recovery,
mm-hmm.
who really helps, again, with addiction. And he's got a new book out. So
right.
we're going to. And now we have our friend and clinical psychologist and life coach and author, John Duffy, Dr. John Duffy, in the studio. It's like a special must listen, Bill and Wendy, today.
A mental wellness happy hour.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
It was interesting listening to Deanna Adler talking about a rock and roll son not wanting to reveal that he has a drug problem, because if we as parents, you know, we may say to our friends, yeah, so-and-so, my son, my daughter has a drug problem. But she said the whole world would know, and she was embarrassed to admit it.
Yeah, and I think that happens a lot, and you can only imagine the scale on which she has to address all of this, right? So in a way, she's showing such courage and such bravery in just being out there. And frankly, her son is as well, by saying, hey, Mom, you go and you talk about these things and talk about Al-Anon and how it helps you and touch these people's lives. I'm not going to be a part of it, but you know, just giving her permission says, okay, let's take the stigma off of all of this and talk about it. And I give them both a whole lot of credit for being
too.
Willing to do that. Yeah.
I know that it doesn't matter what profession is involved. Her son is a rock star. So, I mean, take that for what it's worth.
Right.
But I always wonder, in a case like that, if you're her, do you try to talk to other mothers who are in a similar position? I mean, anyone whose son or daughter is involved in drugs, they have that in common. But I wonder if she had reached out to the other mothers in the band and said, hey, we have a similar problem. Let's get together. Would that help, do you think?
You know, it's interesting what one people will say like addiction and mental illness are the great equalizers in life. So
yeah.
you might have somebody who's a rock star and somebody who is driving Uber and and somebody who's a CEO, and they're all attending the same meeting. Yeah. You know what I mean? And suddenly everybody's just a human being who is going through something. I don't know that it's necessary to have people who are like you in your group or in your meeting in order to really have, effective movement.
Sure.
Sometimes I think it's useful to have to just feel like a regular guy.
Oh, yeah,
you know
I
what
bet.
I mean? Yeah.
Yep.
And I have to say, off the air, Deanna kept saying, I just want to get together with a bunch of mothers and let them know that it's okay if your son or daughter uses drugs. Just admit it and love them and support them and know it's not your fault.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not your fault is a big part of it, right? That's why I love to hear her talk about Al-Anon, you know, which is this deeply supportive group for families and more mothers, let's face it, you know, attend this stuff than anybody else. And they get that vibe. They get that feeling from each other and that enormous support from each other. This isn't your fault. And the key for you is to take care of yourself and be available for them when they're ready, you know, because you can't prompt that moment when they're ready to get help.
At what point, though, John, do you say, because the message that she kept giving out is, I wanted him to know that we're behind him, I'm not giving up on him, I'm here when he needs me and stuff like that. But a lot of parents have said at some point you have to go the other route and just say, now it's tough love time. I can't keep doing this.
Yes.
Yeah. It's hurting me too much to keep doing this. How do you know when that time has come, if at all?
You know, both approaches have the best of intentions underneath them, right?
Yeah.
I want my child to get better. I think sometimes the tough love approach, especially if it comes early in the game, feels just like abject rejection. And I'm
I could never
alone.
Do it. Yeah. Sorry.
That's the other thing is I think the vast majority of parents I've talked to and maybe lightly suggested that to said, well, I could sign up for it for a couple of hours and then I'm going to be on the phone asking, are you under the viaduct or are you okay?
Right.
You know, I think there's this instinct that tells us I want to be there. I want to be supportive all the way through.
Yeah.
And Tim Ryan, who we'll talk to on the stream, he says sometimes you got it. It comes down to tough love or you're dead.
Well, it's kind of like the life preserver. If you know that your child is drowning and is going to take you with him, then you've got to say at some point, I love you, I would do anything for you, but this I can't fix, and so I'm getting out of the water, you know? And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to do at some point. And it sometimes sends the message to the addict that, hey, things are grave enough where I have to step out because you're giving me no options. I have no idea what to do to help you.
All right, these are all pretty heavy things, and we're going to continue that with Tim Ryan. So, conversely,
do you have cupcakes at some point during the show, Wendy, just a cupcake to make things
for a mood cleanser.
Please, is it possible at some point? All right.
Yeah. So, like, you know, how do we get ourselves happier? Can we take a break and come back and try and figure out how to deal with
Absolutely.
All this and make ourselves happier in life?
We will make that happen.
All right, that's coming up next. Stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Dr. John Duffy is here because it's the 22nd. That's the reason we had him in, just to prove Wendy right. Something a little bit happier, John. Just a little bit happier.
Let's see if we can't lighten the mood
a
little bit.
Yes, just a little.
So I had the good fortune of spending some time overseas in the last couple of weeks, and I realized there are some lifestyle lessons that we can learn from other cultures, which seems so evident and obvious. And yet when you're there and you see how people live, I happen to be in Ireland, but I've spent some time overseas in the past. And you feel this slower pace of life kind of across the board where people stop in the street and greet one another and greet you as strangers. And there's less looking at phones. And when I describe my lifestyle about how much I work and, you know, they're like, why would you do that to yourself? You know? And so I don't know that we need to pick up every cue from every European nation that kind of has siestas and really values like the face-to-face relationship, but there was something profound about it because as I came back, I realized, oh, I'm so much more relaxed than I was when I left, you know, and I realized so few things are urgent and, you know, that human connection was so valuable to me and is so valuable to them and you can feel it that I thought it might be worth just talking about because everything is so moderate there, eating and drinking and time on screens. And what they seem to value most is just human connection And it was really something to witness now once again, that this slower, and not wildly slower, you know, everyone's making a living in things, but this slower pace of life that, you know, right. where you take a moment to kind of smell the roses, for lack of a better.
All right. So how did most of the United States fall into the trap of the high pressure, no downtime lifestyle? And do you think it's possible for us to ever get it back?
I don't think we can get it back completely. I think there's something about the American way, you know, that goes back 250 years where we're scrappy and we're hardworking. And, you know, and I don't know that.
And we like to buy stuff.
We like stuff.
We work hard. We like stuff.
Yeah, we like stuff. And that isn't always the case. If you look around most of Europe, for example, you're going to see smaller houses, little tiny cars that just a couple of people can fit in, you know, and people buy their groceries, you know, on the way home from work. Costco is not a thing there. So we like our stuff. You're right. And I don't know that all that has to change dramatically. And I think part of that is the American way and why we're so successful. And I think we're admired in many ways throughout the world for having that kind of hard work ethic. But I think there's something to be gained from slowing down every once in a while, a few times a day, taking a few breaths, connecting with somebody you might not otherwise connect with, putting the screen down for a while, you know, and changing a few habits, you know, protecting time to take a walk, to eat something healthy as opposed to something that's just on the run. One thing I noticed is people enjoy their food there. And I found myself marveling at that. Like, well, I think of food as sustenance toward the next thing. And these people actually, food is the destination. That's the point, you know?
And in Italy and France, it's not uncommon for a meal to last 3 hours. Mm-hmm. That's not a strange thing at all. Here, you're complaining about the service if it's more than 45 minutes.
Right, right. And you never see that there. In fact, people will sit and linger. And it seems like there's something they deeply value about that. And curiously, I was talking to this one man who said, well, you could move here one day, but you, pointing to me, won't have any work because nobody goes to see therapists. We talk to the guy at the pub or our best friend.
But at least they're talking.
But they're talking, right? They're talking. And he said, of course, we have mental health services for people with severe mental illnesses. But for people who are a little down or depressed or something, we just talk to each other. We try to work it out together, you know? And there was something kind of heartwarming about that, you know?
But they don't do that too much here. And I'm not going to blame it on a man-woman thing, but women tend to open up to their friends more than men open up to their friends about personal problems with their lives or their family lives.
It's a big tangent, but an important one. I think there's a lot that our gender can learn from yours about connecting with each other and being more open man to man, because women are emotionally, I think, arguably far more healthy in America than men are.
And the American way is it's a pride thing. My family's fine. And that might be different if they're getting together at a pub in Ireland to discuss, oh, my old lady was driving me nuts last night, you know, but here it's like, oh, everything's great.
Oh, yeah, right. There's this transparency there. Like, I talked to one man whose son had been in rehab, not unlike your previous guest. Perfectly happy to talk about that. Perfectly happy to talk about the ups and downs of the process. Whereas I think we are far more cloistered and held in and repressed about these things. And I think that's unhealthy. And just to be open and talk about your life in reality, not presenting some facade, but talking about your life in reality, really takes some of the burden off of our day-to-day lives that is so handy for us if we would just take advantage of it.
Aren't you surprised sometimes, like, when you open up your heart to someone and bare your soul, and then they say, oh, my God, I'm going through that, too? Because you do think, I'm the only one with these issues.
Right, right. Well, one thing you learn when you do a job like mine is that everybody is suffering something, you know, everybody, you know, and the envy of the neighbors with the perfect house and the allegedly perfect kids is folly, you know, because nobody's perfect. And perfection, if it existed, would be overrated anyway, right? I mean, what we're going to remember about our lives with our families are the imperfections. You know, this is the good stuff. So I think we lose track of that sometime in trying to create perfection.
Yeah.
Think about when you hear these stories, and Bill, we've read them, when people are on their deathbed, they think back to the times they spent with family, not how big their TV was.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Nobody died thinking I want to spend more time at the office. Shoot.
Go back to the screens angle on this for just a little bit. It's getting worse instead of better, isn't it? If you're on a train or a bus or just anywhere waiting for anything, the old days of people just having a casual conversation with somebody that they didn't know, like if Forrest Gump happened today, he wouldn't be talking to that lady at the bus station. He'd be texting and she'd be playing a video game. That's really sad. Will that ever be fixed? Will there ever be a time where you could just go up to a stranger and go, hey, how about those Cubs, without going, hey, what's wrong with that guy? Why is he talking to me?
I like to think there's a backlash happening. You know, I happen to be with a lot of students who were studying abroad, and it was interesting to watch them talk to people and connect with people with their phones in their pockets, you know? So sometimes I wish that more young people had exposure to other cultures so they could feel what it was like to not be married to that device, whatever it is, you know, and to actually make eye contact with somebody and connect with them and recognize how rewarding that is because a lot of them never grew up knowing that, you know, and so to watch them learn it in real time is a bit of a revelation. So my hope is that you're right and that we have a backlash to all the social media and all the screens and that the next generation goes back to kind of a more human connection.
Yep.
You know, just last night, my friend John was at our house. He's an attorney and a yogi. He's a very interesting dude. And he said, oh, yeah, I got a new phone. And I'm thinking, why is he telling me this? And I asked, why are you telling me this? And he said, I did not put Facebook on it. There's no Twitter on it. He goes, all I can get are phone calls and texts. If I want to search the web at my own convenience, I can. But he goes, I'm completely, what did he say, unchained. I'm free.
Nice.
Well, I deliberately, while I was gone, did not have a very good plan for international service. And so my phone was on for about maybe 10 minutes a day. And to have that off and to keep your head up and your eyes up and seeing like, oh, these are amazing cliffs here. And these are beautiful people walking the streets. I would have missed all that because I would have thought like, oh, I better Instagram this, you know, immediately.
The pressure's on to keep up with your social media.
Of course, right? Yeah, but it's so much more rewarding to have that stuff just put away. So the more we do that, I think the healthier we are, without a doubt.
Can I throw your phone away, Bill? Because I'm sure you'd want me
to. Throw it away. I don't need it anymore.
He really doesn't need it. Well, there are ways to slow down, although easier said than done.
Always easier said than done. And especially for our kids' generation, they were brought up in this culture. And I think it's really, really difficult to step out of that whole social media world because that is a big part of their social connection.
When you came home, you said it was no one was really plugged in there and it was a slower pace. You came back to the United States. Are you working at a slower pace or did you jump right back in?
I jumped back in. I caught myself yesterday for a while and just put it down. And it was great. I mean, it really was. So I'm going to try to make that a practice to have that phone in front of me less.
Perfect.
DrJohnDuffy.com is his website. You can get his book, The Available Parent. We'll hear about your new book when that comes out that you're working on. And his podcast, Undue Anxiety. You can find it at WGN Plus or iTunes. Dr. John Duffy, thank you.
Thank you so much, guys.
We will be back with news. And we, I think, have a moment to breathe at 11:30.
Oh, that'll be nice.
All right. Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
Thank you, Ryan Burrow. We appreciate that. It's Bill and it's Wendy.
This is like Sesame Street music.
Yeah, this
something.
Does have kind of a, or like a game show like that might have happened in the 70s. Like,
is this the Gorillaz?
Yes.
Yes, is it is. The Gorillaz?
According
very
to
good,
Kevin,
Ryan.
They didn't know. We're grandma and grandpa.
But
here
doesn't
with
it
you.
Sound like it's the final round of a game show
yes.
Gene Rayburn is hosting and everybody's writing in their answers and you'd hear this kind of a song in the background?
Yes.
Right?
Now, the Gorillaz are an animated band. They are literally, like, I don't think...
Like the Archies were?
Well, yeah, I don't think they... Well, they may have performed. I don't know, but usually all of their music videos, I think, were animated. They were cartoons.
They
Oh, yeah.
They do perform live, but they have, like, a projector screen with all the animations involved, yeah. It's pretty
cool.
Who
wants to see them playing live when you just watch cartoons?
There was video of it, actually. I can't remember on what channel, but it was incredible. So
maybe
good.
You should listen to that band. They're cartoons, Bill.
If they're cartoons, I'd listen.
And I think the lead singer was the guy from Blur, correct?
That sounds
really?
Right.
Yep, yeah. Correct.
That sounds right. Look at all the people who are in music that don't actually represent themselves. Like Gorillaz aren't what they appear to be. Daft Punk doesn't appear to be what they are. Sia doesn't want her face to be shown. There's so many people now in music that are like, I got to have this facade for my career to take off.
That's kind of a thing now. I mean, especially in electronic music, the helmet with like the lighter stuff is totally a thing.
Yeah.
See, again, my son Michael says there is no soul in music today, and there isn't. It's gimmicky.
It's not like it used to be.
No.
It's definitely not.
You're just not looking in the right place.
Yeah. Where should they be looking, Kevin?
Fade.
Not Fade. No.
That's Kevin's band.
But yeah, Fits in the Tantrums. There's plenty out there.
Yeah.
I think you guys should do your show from Spring Awakening coming up here.
They're talking about it, Ryan.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk upstairs about that.
It plays really well over the AM radio, too. All those beeps and squeaks.
Bill.
Yeah?
What's Spring Awakening?
Oh. You haven't lived.
Nobody tell them what.
It's a music festival of music that is not just alternative, but almost otherworldly.
Electronic music?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll give it to him, yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
We bumped and set him pretty well for that spike, though.
I'll see you guys at Burning Man. All right. Wendy, let's say...
There are a lot of drugs there. I don't see you at Burning Man.
I'm there to tell people to stay off the drugs.
Don't do the dope.
Don't do the dope, kids. Let's say, hypothetically... Judge Neil Gorsuch was in front of you. You know, he's going to be potentially a Supreme Court justice, right? So let's say you can ask him, Neil Gorsuch, a question that will give you a better opinion as to whether or not he, Neil Gorsuch, would be a good Supreme Court justice. What question would you ask him to determine that?
I would like to know if he could truly be bipartisan.
Oh, that's a great question. That is a very good question, because no matter what his answer is, you could read and say to yourself, well, that's a guy that will follow his heart, follow his mind.
Follow the law.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
The law of the land. The right. Constitution.
Right. That's a good question.
What would Ryan would have a better question?
Ryan, let's say again, same hypothetical. Neil Gorsuch is there, and he might be the Supreme Court justice, and he might not. What would be the question you'd ask him to kind of help you figure out whether he'd be good or not at that job?
Gosh, that's hard. I actually like watching all of these questions, because this is probably the most we're going to hear from him for who knows
for a long
how long
time.
Decades. I mean, Clarence Thomas, we haven't heard him say a peep in, you know, since, what, the 90s.
It's been a long time.
Where's my Diet Coke?
You know, I like your question there, Wendy, but I just don't know. I think it'd be like asking an athlete after a game what they thought of it. You know, you just kind of get the run-of-the-mill answer. I don't know if you'd get anything real serious out of it.
What would you ask him, Bill?
Oh, I would ask him the question that Senator Jeff Flake asked him. I don't know if anyone saw this yesterday, but I think this question and answer is the perfect one for any of us to decide whether or not Neil Gorsuch or anybody really would make for a good Supreme Court justice. Listen to this from yesterday's hearings. Listen.
And just like Ben's family, my family's been texting me throughout this process, asking me to ask questions that they would ask. I ask a few of them, you know, for suggestions. And my son, Dallin, a teenager, said, ask him if he would rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck. I'd never heard it either. Apparently, it was a question on Reddit a while ago, but anyway, that's where it's going from here, I think.
You can tell him I'm very rarely at a loss for words.
Okay, all right.
But you got me.
I will tell him. A teenager stumped you there. My brother Scott asked if you've ever worn gym shorts and a tank top under your robe.
Senator, on that one, we have what's called the Fifth Amendment, which is part of the Bill of Rights as well, and which... of course, protects the right not to self-incriminate. So I might have to exercise my rights under the Fifth Amendment to that one.
That is a good answer.
Who says that Supreme Court confirmation hearings can't be fun? We learned yesterday they can be all kinds of fun. So again, that question that Senator Jeff Flake asked, and it's not his question originally, but his young son wanted to know the answer. Would you, sir, Judge Gorsuch, rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck? That's a great question.
All right, well, can we take a break and can we answer this question? Both of us?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Stick around. That and more next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Phil, you shared some fantastic audio with us.
Well, I hope you believe that, Wendy, because I'm very proud of this. This is from yesterday's Supreme Court confirmation hearings with Judge Neil Gorsuch. He's asked a lot of the same standard questions. What would you do if this happened? What would you do if that happened? And then Senator Jeff Flake, who is a Republican senator out of Arizona, asked him the question that we've all wondered. Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck? That's the question he needed an answer to.
Can I tell you what one of our creative listeners has come up with? Because this is awesome. 312-981-7200. Horses are flight animals. They flee. They don't fight. So there wouldn't be a fight. A big horse-sized duck might not be able to fly away.
Yeah, he has a point there.
I would go with the one horse-sized duck,
because
for sure.
Why?
Because if you get it in the heart or the brain, perhaps it would fall down.
Mm-hmm.
100 duck-sized horses, that's too many to deal with.
I'm with you all the way on that. It's you only have to defeat one enemy this way as opposed to 100 potential enemies the other way.
Look at it as problems. One big problem versus 100 little ones. I'd rather have one big problem.
But doesn't this fall to the argument of quality versus quantity?
It does.
Which I always opt for quality.
So you'd get a quality kill then if you got the one big horse.
I think that would be the more difficult kill.
There would be 100.
Yeah, you just kick them. Kick them and stab. You're fine.
Did you ever see the movie The Birds, Kevin?
Yeah, but we're talking horses, not birds.
You would
right?
kick a duck?
No, well, it'd be
why a duck.
I wouldn't kick a duck. I would kick a mini horse, a duck-sized horse.
You
Let's
would?
Let's be clear here.
You're sick. That's sick.
So we're in agreement there. The one.
What if everybody's questions toward Neil Gorsuch were this type of question? Wouldn't that make for a great afternoon if it was just one ridiculous question after another? Even though he's going to be a potential Supreme Court justice, but what if everybody treated the questions like that?
I'm surprised none of the senators did a dab after a question like that, right? Isn't that what the teenagers like to do? They ask a silly question, then they dab.
Yeah.
And that would be bad if everybody asked silly questions like that. But you said this particular questionnaire.
Jeff Flake.
He was criticized for that.
Yeah, he's getting some criticism from people who say this is a very serious position. No levity, please. We need to get to the bottom of this. Now, he attributed this to his son, Dallin, who is a young teenager. They're very specific on
He's
the
He's a man-sized teenager.
He's, right. Would you rather fight one man-sized teenager or a dozen teenage-sized men? That's a tough... See?
I'd still go with the one.
It gets tough, doesn't it?
It does.
Now, he has had Jeff Flake. He's got a bunch of kids. One of them has caused him some problems. Back in 2013, here's a story about his son. Which of his sons is this? Here's the story. I'll get to his son. Oh, Tanner is his son's name.
He has cool kid names.
Yeah,
soap opera names.
Yeah, yeah.
Dallin, Tanner.
Yeah. If my last name was Flake, though, you know one of my kids' name would be Frosted. I'd go with Frosted, Corn, Dandruff.
Thank God you don't make big decisions in anyone's life, including your own. Thank God for Terry. That's all I have to say.
You don't think it'd be cool to have a son named Frosty?
Sure.
Flake? That'd be the coolest thing ever. All right.
I bet he's great.
That's when people ask you how he's doing. That's what you say. How's your son Frosty doing? He's great.
How do you get through life every day?
Senator Jeff, now this is serious, Wendy. Listen to that. This is a crazy story about one of his sons. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, a devout Mormon and a family man, has apologized for homophobic, racist, and anti-Semitic comments posted online by his teenage son. The high schooler, Tanner, posted the offensive remarks in February and in March. In one message, he threatened to, I can't say most of this. He threatened something against somebody who stole his motorcycle from a church parking lot and frequently used the N-word in a series of Facebook postings. The Republican lawmaker said he was very disappointed in his son's online behavior. This language is unacceptable anywhere. Needless to say, I've already spoken with him about this. He has apologized, and I apologize as well, the senator said in a statement. This was in June of 2013. The GOP politician recently brought his son Tanner into the spotlight by publicizing a survival expedition that they had embarked on, making public the father-son bonding experience on their Facebook pages. Tanner Flake's offensive Twitter postings were originally reported by BuzzFeed to the word I can't say on the radio, who stole my dirt bike from the church parking lot. I will find you. I will beat the crap out of you. The boy whose Twitter handle is T Flakery wrote on March the 20th. I'm down with some, and again, a word I can't say, say something hilarious. I guarantee that it will say it louder and get all the credit. Jew, he tweeted in February.
It's not Jeff Flake's fault.
It's not his fault.
His son did, and, you know, we can teach our children well and hope they represent us well, but they're their own human beings,
Right.
How is that Jeff Flake's?
It's not. And
why are we talking about this from 4 years ago?
Just to show that his sons have been in the spotlight in the past.
So he's keeping them in the spotlight.
He did bring Gallen in.
Stupid questions.
Right.
But, you know, for him being criticized to ask goofy questions like that, Neil Gorsuch has been asked pretty much every question.
Been a busy couple days.
We couldn't really think of a question to ask him because he's been asked everything. So a little levity in this situation right now.
Right.
I like it.
10 hours of testimony yesterday.
Was it 10?
So laugh for 20 seconds.
Yeah, I don't understand the people. And actually, if you see the video clip of this, you see everybody at the beginning of Jeff Flake's questioning, kind of like, oh, how much longer is this going to go on? And then he asked a funny question or two, and you could see it in their faces. Oh, it's okay to smile again. It's been a long time since we've smiled or laughed. So give him credit for that.
He breathed life back into that room for a second, right. 20 seconds.
Right.
10 hours.
I'm sure. And how much the day before? Do we know that?
It's several hours every day. They're back at it again today.
Yeah.
I don't know if they got a stopwatch going. What I do like, though, is that all of that information is entered into public records.
Sure,
so, someday in the year 2300, they're going to look back at the testimony and say, wait, what? What was going on in America?
And
in
that year, when horse-sized ducks are roaming freely and ruining everybody's lives, they'll go, this was the time we could have changed all that.
Well, that'll be a political platform at that point, right?
No.
Are you pro-duck or are you pro-horse?
Why not a chicken?
Why a duck, Wendy?
Oh, right, now you're talking third party. This is getting a little crazy.
Can I give a phone number of the stream, which we will be on? Just throw it out there now. Write this down, 312-235-2525. That's 312-235-2525. You can call us when we sneak on over to the stream, and we'll find out who's sitting in for Steve Bertrand and the Wind Trust Business Lunch when we return. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.